couple of record-setting African athletes.
Kim, here's a sunny side of sports salute to Kenzeba Dibaba of Ethiopia and Ayanle Suleiman of Djibouti, who set indoor world records in Stockholm, Sweden. The 25-year-old Kenzeba set a new world record in the women's mile, clocking 4 minutes and 13.31 seconds. She broke the previous record, set by Romania's Doina Malinte, by nearly 4 seconds. The Ethiopian star was named the IAAF's World Female Athlete of the Year for 2015. Kenzeba says the Stockholm track has been very good to her. This is the third consecutive year she set an indoor world record in Stockholm, having previously set the 3,000 and 5,000-meter world records. Meanwhile, Ayanle Suleiman of Djibouti set an indoor world record for 1,000 meters, which, like the mile, is not an official Olympic distance. His time was 2 minutes and 14.20 seconds. Our African football guru, David Legg, has been looking at the recent results in the CAF Champions League and CAF Confederation Cup club tournaments. This evening, David's focus is the Confed Cup.
The results, Sammy, we start with V-Club Makanda of Congo, 0. Akwa United of Nigeria, 1. Police of Rwanda, 3. Atla Bara of South Sudan, 1. Sagrada Esperanca of Angola, 1. Ajax Cape Town of South Africa, 2. Gagnoa of Ivory Coast, 2. USFAS of Mali, 0. Quakap Marrakesh of Morocco, 3. USFA of Burkina Faso, 0. Light Stars of Seychelles, 0. Bidvest Wits of South Africa, 3. Renaissance of Chad, 1. New Stars of Douala, Cameroon, 0. Harare City of Zimbabwe, 3. Adema of Madagascar, 2. Barajin of Mali, 1. Stade Gabessien of Tunisia, 1. Asarawa United of Nigeria, 2. Generation Foot of Senegal, 1. Defense of Ethiopia, 1. Mizr El Makwash of Egypt, 3. Lupopo of DR Congo, 2. Bandari of Kenya, 0. Al-Ittihad of Libya, 4. Sonadep of Niger, 1. UMS Loom of Cameroon, 0. Desportivo Mongomo of Guinea Equatorial, 0. Khartoum of Sudan, 0. Villa of Uganda, 1. Fomboni of Comores, 1. Atletico Olympic of Burundi, 0. And Diablo Noir of Congo, 1. Africa Sports of Ivory Coast, 2. There were also a couple of byes, Sonny. JKU of Zanzibar and Maludi Oran advanced to the round of 32 after the withdrawals of Gaborone United of Botswana and Waledan of Gambia.
David, now let's go to Lubumbashi in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where TP Mazembe will host Etoile Sahel of Tunisia in the annual Super Cup match this coming weekend. How is that shaping up?
That's a very attractive pairing, Sonny, and that match will be on Saturday afternoon. And one significant factor is that two of the players responsible for Mazembe and Etoile Sahel winning CAF Club competitions last year will not be in action. The leading scorers, in fact, you have Mbwana Ali Samata, the Tanzanian, who scored 7 goals in the Champions League last year to make him the joint top scorer. He's now playing for Genk in Belgium. And on the other side of the fence, so to speak, you've got Bagdad Bounedjah. He was the Algerian who played for Etoile Sahel. He was the joint leading scorer in the CAF Confederation Cup with 6 goals. He's now playing in Qatar. So both sides looking really at finding new sharpshooters. It's also Sonny going to mark a debut as Mazembe coach at CAF level for Hubert Velut. He's a former goalkeeper, he's a Frenchman, and he's taking over from compatriot Patrice Carteron. Carteron quit the club in January after a really disappointing FIFA Club World Cup campaign, Mazembe finishing 6th out of 7. Now, in this competition, Sonny, I always feel that the odds are balanced very much in favor of the Champions League winners. I looked at the statistics, and sure enough, there have been 23 Super Cup matches, and 20 have been won by the African champions. And the reason for that is, apart from the first 3 years and one other occasion when CAF was celebrating their 50th birthday, the Champions League winners have home advantage. And being a one-off match, that to me, Sonny, gives the home side a huge advantage. Now, what they do in Europe is they play this match in a neutral country. Unfortunately, that doesn't work in Africa. Fans just don't have the financial resources to travel. And then in the first 3 years of the competition, they did try it. Crowds were very poor, and CAF decided to cut their losses and give home advantage. My suggestion, Sonny, is if you've got to play it at the grounds of the clubs involved, then it's got to become a two-leg affair. I know there is the risk of fixture congestion in Africa all the time, but nevertheless, my plea to the CAF officials who are listening in is let's make this a fairer, more equitable competition. Bearing out my facts, Sonny, only three teams, Africa Sports in 1993, Etoile Sahel in 1998, and more recently, Maghreb Fez in 2012, have won the competition on enemy territory. So I think it's only fair and probably rather safe of me to say that Mazembe will definitely start as favourites. This match, Sonny, pits Velud, a newcomer to CAF combat, so to speak, up against Fawzi Benzarte. Now, Fawzi Benzarte is a man in his 60s, and he is the joint second most successful coach in CAF club competitions. He's got four titles. The head of the field is Manuel Jose, the Portuguese, who, of course, has coached Al Ahly of Egypt several times, and he's got eight titles. But if Benzarte can pull it off on Saturday and Etoile Sahel can upset the apple cart and win, then Benzarte goes to five titles and he'll be in second place all on his own.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. In 1972, something called Title IX became law here in the USA. It states that no person shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from or be subjected to discrimination in any education program or activity receiving federal funds. While it makes no mention of sports, it had a major impact there, opening the door to greater participation of girls and women. But years later, many say the nation's schools remain segregated along racial and economic lines, and that girls of color are particularly affected in sports. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The National Women's Law Center and the Poverty and Race Research Action Council have studied discrepancies in sports resources. In 2015, they released a report called Finishing Last, Girls of Color and School Sports Opportunities. It says while heavily minority schools have fewer athletic opportunities overall, those limited opportunities are not distributed equally among boys and girls. It says girls of color get less than their fair share. Nina Chaudhry is the National Women's Law Center Senior Counsel and Director of Equal Opportunities in Athletics. She says there's been some movement on the issue, but not nearly enough.
We know that there are some changes in districts where complaints have been filed because the Department of Education has required districts to increase opportunities for girls to play sports. So there are changes happening regularly, but I don't know that we've seen a real change in terms of opportunities for girls of color.
She says many people were somewhat surprised by the report's findings so many years after Title IX took effect.
One, the report shows that we still have schools across the country that are racially isolated, which is not surprising to those of us who work in the field, but we did show that 42% of our nation's schools fall into one of two categories, either 90% or more white students or 90% or more minority students.
Chaudhry says no one had really looked at the lack of sports opportunities for girls compared to boys in the mostly minority schools. The Finishing Last report says 40% of heavily minority high schools have large female opportunity gaps, compared to 16% of heavily white schools. Equal opportunity in sports, she says, is backed by the law.
There are several laws that apply to states in terms of making sure that the school districts across the state receive equal resources, both in terms of academic opportunities and extracurricular opportunities. So, you know, one area where states really need to step up is in ensuring that the school districts across their state are being treated equally.
Yet, despite the law, economic conditions can be a major factor in who gets more resources.
Often, the heavily minority school districts are in areas, I think, that are less wealthy. The way our school system is set up in the United States, it depends heavily on property taxes. So, you know, it's part of a larger inequity that exists that spans housing and schools and a whole bunch of factors.
No matter what the school district, wealthy or poor, white or minority, Title IX, she says, requires fairness.
I think the fact that girls are receiving fewer opportunities at all schools is a reflection of the fact that schools really haven't been doing their job. They haven't been assessing their schools regularly and their programs and making sure that they are dividing up what opportunities there are in an equal fashion.
Chaudhry says not having equal sports opportunities has a huge impact on girls in general.
We know that sports opportunities for both boys and girls bring about a multitude of benefits, from improved health outcomes to better academic outcomes. So girls who play sports are more likely to stay in school, to have higher grades, higher test scores. They're more likely to enter non-traditional fields that pay better. And they're also less likely to engage in risky behaviors, drug use, sexual activity, smoking.
Sports also contribute to leadership skills and self-esteem. Chaudhry says,